Board of Supervisors will reconvene. I wanted to make note that we have received correspondence from, two pieces of correspondence from Rebecca Davis that are in the record, correct, Ms. Wendy?
Yes, thank you.
All right, with that, we'll go back to Ms. Nielsen and Klamath Water Users Association.
Good afternoon, Elizabeth Nielsen, Deputy County Administrator. And due to our technical issues, I am reading a statement from Paul Simmons, Executive Director for Klamath Water Users Association. So it says, Chairman Kobseff, Supervisors, thank you very much for holding this meeting and for the invitation to address your board. My name is Paul Simmons, and I am the Executive Director and Counsel for Klamath Water Users Association. I apologize that I am not with you in person as I had intended to be. The public comment has reinforced that the people and communities around and downstream of the now drained lakes and the dams are experiencing major damage. I hope that this hearing will help the rest of the world understand that and take notice and respect these communities and do whatever can be done to redress the impacts that are being felt. KWUA, Klamath Water Users Association, represents irrigation water users who are upstream, the producers who rely on water diverted from Upper Klamath Lake and the Klamath River above Keno Dam. This includes farms in the northeastern part of Siskiyou County, as well as in Modoc County and Klamath County, Oregon. Although the area where you are is the area where the most significant impacts are occurring, it is also true that here, upstream, there are concerns. We are starting to experience some impacts, and we are at the cusp of experiencing additional unmitigated impacts from dam removal unless there is a change very soon. One area of concern is new financial impacts. Link River Dam and Keno Dam are not slated for removal. For as long as those two dams have existed, Pacific Corps has been responsible for operation and maintenance or rehabilitation of those facilities. With Pacific Corps taking its leave from the main stem Klamath River, the Bureau of Reclamation will be taking over those facilities. We hear reference to large amounts of money that may be necessary for modification or fish passage facilities, or any number of other things. We are concerned that Reclamation will look to pass those costs through to our members. These would be new financial burdens, and we did not ask for, let alone agree to this. Another area of concern is regulatory impacts. We assume that there will be fish, salmonids, in our part of the world that we do not currently have. The fish may present conflicts with it when it comes to diverting water or using land. Regulators tend to regulate, and there is no shortage of parties who are ready and eager to sue irrigators over impacts to fish. We have made our concern about regulatory impacts known for a long time. Several years ago, state and federal agencies committed to, quote, to take every reasonable and legally permissible step to avoid or minimize any adverse impact in the form of new regulation or other legal or funding obligation, end quote, that might occur in our area. This commitment included consideration of changes in laws or regulations if necessary to ensure that our members are not adversely affected. But in the 14 years that dam removal has been a real possibility, there have been no steps taken at all to prevent negative regulatory impacts to our members. So what are we doing? We have been working with our congressional delegation to secure federal legislation that would address these negative impacts. That legislation would ensure there would be no cost for irrigators associated with infrastructure that was historically operated by Pacific Corps, and at a minimum provide funding for fish screens for diversion. And overall, we hope, do anything that can be done to avoid negative impacts on our part of the world. Klamath Water Users Association is grateful for your support and eager to know how we can support the communities around and below Kopko and Iron Gate. Thank you, Paul Simmons.
With that, I'm happy to take any questions from the board and can direct them to Paul if need be.
Any questions from the board for Mr. Simmons? Okay.
Thank you.
We'll move on to item 4D, Klamath River Renewal Corporation. And for those of you that have public comment, we'll wait for the presentation and then I'll call upon those of you that like to make public comment. Who's presenting? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Mr. Chairman and members of the Board of Supervisors, my name is Mark Bransom with the Klamath River Renewal Corporation. We appreciate the invitation to be here today to hear the comments and the questions and the concerns and to provide you all with an update on project status and to take any questions that you all might have for us this afternoon. I've been standing in the back of the room throughout the entire meeting and listening to the comments and questions and concerns expressed by members of the public and residents. I want to acknowledge that this is a difficult time, and I understand that what folks are observing, what we're all observing, represents a significant change, and that change like this can be difficult. We've had observations of things that are difficult to understand, and I think it's my view that we're facing a difficult time, but I believe it's a relatively temporary period while we turn a corner. Things that we're observing are within the range of things that we had anticipated. And we're doing a significant amount of monitoring, and I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that with the passage of some time, we're going to start to see the positive results that we believe will be derived from the work that is underway. I want to let the board know that we're more than happy to meet with supervisors or staff and to continue to engage with the public and residents to work through and take the questions and be responsive to concerns, and we have been. We've been spending a significant amount of time over the last weeks with residents around COPCO and along the river, answering questions and addressing issues that have come up, most of which, again, are things that we had anticipated and planned for and have been responsive to. And so I want to just again thank you for the opportunity to be here today to listen to the comments, questions, the concerns, provide some updates for you all, and then again stand for some questions. So Ren is going to walk through some slides by way of an update, and then we'll be available. Thank you. Oh, sure. A brief overview of the Klamath River Renewal Corporation, because there were some questions earlier today about that. The Renewal Corporation is a nonprofit that was formed by the signatories of the amended Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement to be responsible for implementation of that settlement agreement, namely to obtain all of the necessary permits and authorizations and approvals to take ownership of the hydroelectric project, including the four dams, all of the powerhouses and related facilities, and then oversee the removal of those dams and the appurtenant facilities, and to restore the project lands. That is roughly 8,000 acres of land that make up the hydroelectric project, and of that 8,000, about 2,200 acres of land will be receiving some form of direct restoration activity, and we've seen that work already underway with some of the initial revegetation work that's being done and will continue through this year and next year and even into 2026. So again, the Renewal Corporation is the entity that has obtained all the permits, is operating under those permits to implement dam removal and restoration of those project lands. So with that, let me turn it over to you.
Hello everyone, my name is Ren Brownell and I'm the Public Information Officer for the project with KRRC. And if you could please switch to the next slide.
Speak a little closer to the mic.
You can pull it off there too, if that's easier.
Yes, better?
Yep.
Okay. So I'm going to give some super high level information about the project and then we're going to get into the general update, where we are, the things we're seeing. Right, so four dams are slated for removal. They're COPCO number one, which was completed in 1918, COPCO number two, 1925, that dam has already been removed, J.C. Boyle, which was completed in 1957, and Iron Gate, which was completed in 1962. Next slide, please. So all of these dams were privately owned and operated by PacifiCorp. They were surrendered, and so now the license is in our hands, along with the pertinent properties and the dams themselves. They generated a small amount of electricity in regards to PacifiCorp's portfolio, and they weren't operated to provide flood control. They didn't provide any irrigation diversions or storage. And decommissioning provided cost certainty and ultimately savings for PacifiCorp. So they stayed in place and been brought up to modern standards. The cost was actually higher for ratepayers. Next slide, please. There's two key reasons the dams are being removed. One is water quality impacts that people experience downstream. So it improves water quality for fish habitat, increases dissolved oxygen, and eliminates the reservoir algae that we see. Next slide. And the other reason is that, and from this image, you can see where these dams are located. Iron Gate is the lowermost. COPCO 1 and 2 are sandwiched quite close together. And then J.C. Boyle is up in Oregon. And they bisected the basin. So by removing the dams, you open up about 400 miles of historic spawning habitat. Next slide. So before removal got underway, there was a significant amount of permits that had to be applied for, regulatory oversight, and management plans. So there's just under 50 different management plans associated with the project. And these are all publicly available. So if you go to our website, which is klamathrenewal.org, and you go to the resources page, and under the regulatory tab, you can see all of these management plans. I only have 2 minutes today, so I'm not going to dive into them, but they are publicly available. Next slide. So the biggest thing that happened last year was the removal of COPCO number two. It was different than the other dams. It didn't create a reservoir. It was a diversion dam that funneled the river's flows into a tunnel that led to a powerhouse where it generated electricity. And because this one didn't have a significant reservoir, and because it was located right below COPCO number one, this dam was removed last summer. And so that's a before and after picture. The after picture is in about September. Next slide. So here is what we're looking at for the year going forward. So on the left-hand side, you can see that we first implemented operational drawdown. So we drew the reservoirs down as far as we could. We began the initial drawdown period in early January. We started with Iron Gate, then jumped up to J.C. Boyle, and then the COPCO Reservoir. And we actually have just wrapped up this initial phase of drawdown. It's called the initial phase because we've officially released all of the waters that were held back by the dams. But because we were draining them so slowly, that there is the potential that we have a significant we'll get to that.
Wow.
We can explain in a moment why you saw the COPCO Reservoir drain at a faster rate than was anticipated. And part of it is that it was so the plans and expectations for how fast COPCO would drain were planned in the 50th percentile year, right? And the size of the hole was made for that, and we ended up not experiencing the water year that was expected. However, down at Iron Gate, there is a smaller closure. And similarly, even at COPCO, right, it's made to a certain CFS. And this system, the Klamath Basin, has the ability to put enough water into the system that it wouldn't release, it wouldn't be normal river flows through those tunnels still. So that's what I'm trying to get at, is that there is the potential for them to refill during the spring runoff period. And that is why we will not begin deconstructing the dams until we are sure that the river has return to base flows after the first spring flush. And then we'll begin deconstructing the dams all simultaneously and hope to have volitional fish passage by fall. Cubic feet per second. All right, next slide. So this is what I was describing, that you have the initial phase of drawdown, the draining of the waters that were held, but then final drawdown won't be established until we reach those minimal buyout flow conditions after spring has occurred.
So I want to talk a little bit about the sediment and the sedimentation that's being observed in the river at this point in time. So of course these dams, as Ren indicated, have been on the river for over 100 years, and a significant amount of sediment was blocked from moving down through the river system and accumulated behind these dams. And the estimates were that there was somewhere on the order around 17 to 20 million cubic yards of sediment accumulated behind the dams that otherwise would have been transported down the river and much of that out into the ocean. And all of the work that was done in anticipation of the drawdown and the dam removal estimated that somewhere around a third of that total material of sediment would have been mobilized during the drawdown and moved down through the river, and again, much of it out to the ocean. That number, that 5 to 7 million yards, is about what the Klamath River transports through its length on an average year. And so we're adding about 1 year's worth of sediment to the river. Obviously, we're adding that amount of sediment in a shorter period of time, but that is roughly, for context, an equivalent of 1 year's worth of sediment. So it is not an extraordinary amount of sediment being added relative to what the Klamath River typically transports. I know the turbidity levels are high, and to look at the river is disturbing because of the coloration and the amount of material that is in it. Now, we've heard some reports. I have not seen any of the water quality or sediment quality data that was commented on earlier today, so it wouldn't be appropriate for the Renewal Corporation to talk about that, but we are doing ongoing monitoring. As Chelsea reported to the board earlier today, we have multiple kinds of monitoring going on, including real-time continuous monitoring, as well as grab samples that are being taken at repeat locations along the river, and will continue to be for the duration of our permits, which could extend out into the 2028, 2029, 2030 timeframe. So the monitoring will be ongoing for an extended period of time. But the studies were comprehensive. There was a lot of work done by federal agencies and state agencies as part of the planning process leading up to the issuance of permits and ultimately FERC's surrender order. And the conclusion that EPA and others came to was that the sediments are non-toxic. Testing has shown that it is mostly dead algae, fine sands and clays and some gravels in there mixed in with the dead algae.
I can have the next slide.
Something like.
So real quickly, Mark, you got ahead of my presentation. It's all right. I forgive you. But so I just want to quickly show you what drawdown looked like and where we are at today. So this is on January 11th when we initiated drawdown at the Iron Gate Reservoir. And then next slide. And now this is what it is looking like fully drained.
Which day is this picture taken?
This is yesterday. This is quite recently. Next slide, please. This is initiation at J.C. Boyle. And J.C. Boyle drained much more quickly than the other dams, in line with what we expected, but it had significantly less storage than the other ones did. Next slide. So this one is actually taken from January after it was completely drained within 17 hours of initiating drawdown. And then next slide. And then I just want to briefly show you, this is obviously pre-drawdown at the Kopco Dam. We installed this steel pipe on the exterior. On the right-hand side is the diversion tunnel that was used during the dam's construction. We were able to use that infrastructure for drawdown at the Iron Gate Dam, but we couldn't utilize it here. It was too old. It wasn't going to be a safe option. So that's why we made our own tunnel and then inserted this steel pipe. And that's what you're seeing here. And while We have drained the reservoir through the steel pipe. In the coming weeks, we'll actually switch over to that diversion tunnel. So that's why I wanted to show you guys this. Next slide. And then it was blasted, and then you can go to the next slide. And now, Mark, you can talk about drawdown strategy.
Yeah, so the Copco Reservoir certainly did come down more quickly than we had originally anticipated. Part of that was work that we had done in advance, so we knew that we were speeding up the process. But overall, the drawdown is relatively consistent with the time frame that we had been planning for, or at least within the range. We were a month out from the opening of the Iron Gate tunnel to the final drawdown at Copco, and we had estimated that we would be somewhere between roughly a month to up to 2 to 2.5 months. That was the window that was given to us to initiate and complete the drawdown of these reservoirs. The first thing we did from about late December through early January was to lower Copco Reservoir down to the minimum operating pool. That really produced two positive benefits for us. One, it reduced the amount of water that we had to release after we opened up the new tunnel. And secondly, it allowed those hillsides around the reservoir rim to start to drain out and dewater. And that was important from a public safety perspective because as we reported to homeowners, there had been studies that suggested that some of those homes that were very close to the reservoir rim might see some settling of the geology or the soils that those homes are built on as a result of the water being drained out and those soil formations and the geology settling. So by drawing the reservoir down several weeks in advance to that minimum operating pool, we actually allowed the hill slopes to begin to drain out, which created a safer condition for those homes by reducing the risk that there would be any settling of the foundations or sloughing of those banks. We wanted to manage the drawdown rate to further protect public safety. And so in order to accomplish that, we called for banked water. So during the period when we were lowering the reservoir to the minimum operating pool, we entered into an agreement with the Bureau of Reclamation that the water that we were releasing would basically allow them to retain water in Upper Klamath Lake. And by that, they were able to meet their minimum flows using the water that we were releasing. So we called on our banked water during the initial days of the drawdown of Copco Reservoir. And what that did was mitigated the drawdown rate so that we were able to further mitigate the risk of some of that slope instability and the potential sloughing. And then lastly, we had observed the work that we did at J.C. Boyle when we blasted open the culvert under the spillway there to initiate drawdown. And we used the information that we learned there, and we basically just confirmed the plan that we had to open up the new tunnel through the base of Copco Dam. And with that confirmation, then, we had a very successful opening. If you look at pictures from the upstream side of the dam, you can see that the tunnel was completely opened. And so when we had assurance that we had that tunnel completely open, that increased the amount of flow that was moving through the tunnel relative to what we had estimated at the lower end. We were not completely at the upper end. But again, all of these observations and all of these conditions are within the range of things that we had anticipated. So the drawdown was a little quicker than we had thought because we brought the reservoir down to minimum operating pool. And then we had less water coming in, even though we did have our banked water. It was less water than we had thought, and it was less than had been estimated based on the type of water year that was used as part of the modeling and the planning work that that went into the work originally. Next slide, please. All right, I wanted to just talk a little bit again about some of the potential and mediated impacts. So as Ren said, the initial phase of drawdown is now complete. The reservoirs have been completely drained out. What we see now is the river beginning to reoccupy its historic channel. The flows are coming in from Upper Klamath Lake, released from Keno. And so we're back to the base flow condition and waiting to see what we will expect from the spring runoff. We have not seen any slope stability at any of the homes at this time, and we will continue to monitor. So residents will acknowledge that we have been flying drones and that we have had monitoring crews out on the ground multiple times every day to observe conditions, and we've had no reports and no observations of any slope stability impacts on any of the homes around Kopko Reservoir. Chelsea did report that the Kopko Road repair at milepost 13 was completed. The Renewal Corporation hired a contractor to go out and to effect that repair and get that road back to two lanes and safely reopened. And that work was completed a couple of weeks ago. We do have two wells that were impacted. These are domestic wells over on Patricia Avenue area. We had anticipated and we had reported to property owners that there might be as many as 20 or at the upper range, as many as two dozen domestic wells, private residential wells, that could be impacted by the drawdown of Kopko Reservoir. And as of right now, there are two wells. We brought in temporary water supplies while we worked through with the co-licensees the approach that we will be taking to long-term solutions. I want to be real clear that the co-licensees will put in place long-term solutions for those wells that have been impacted. We are working now to make sure that we have an understanding of the full scope of the issue. The reservoirs are completely drained and we are down to the river level, but the subsurface geology is much slower to respond to the reservoir being gone. And so my point is that there will continue to be a period of time, we don't know if that's weeks or months, that it will take for that geology to respond to the new water level down in the river. And as those subsurface formations and the soils continue to drain and respond to the new lower water level, it is possible that we may see some additional wells come into the into the scope of this issue. But again, we've put these temporary measures in place. We're continuing to monitor the wells. We're continuing to keep those temporary storage tanks full. We continue to consult with the property owners and the well manager at the community well on Patricia, and we will continue to respond to people who express concerns or who are seeing issues with their well productivity. So we will continue to stay on top of this issue and monitor and work with the property owners for purposes of making sure that they have both short-term as well as long-term solutions to rely on. Next slide, please. Do you want to do this? Okay. Just want to remind folks that last year, land stewards downstream of the hydroelectric breach, in addition to people around the reservoirs who were sent information about what to expect during the drawdown phase, we sent letters to land stewards downstream so that folks had the ability to anticipate what they would be seeing, what the observations would be, and how to contact the Renewal Corporation or our contractors in the event that they had issued a report. In that letter, we informed land stewards that we would continue to closely monitor sediment for an extended period of time, and that if people had concerns with any sediment deposit that they were observing outside of the main stem of the river, that they could contact us and we would work with them for purposes of looking at remediation. And in the interim, beginning before drawdown, we had been and we continue to work with folks who do have irrigation diversions from the Klamath River to ensure that they have alternative diversion points or alternative water supplies in the short term for their irrigation needs. And as I mentioned before, the terms and conditions of our many permits require that we continue monitoring for at least the next 5 years, and the permits will ensure that we continue with a comprehensive monitoring program and reporting. We provide these monitoring reports on a regular basis to each of the regulators who have permit oversight. They receive those provisional monitoring reports they determine whether those are now considered final or whether they have comments or questions on those reports, and we make any amendments to those monitoring reports, and then they are considered final and can and will be made available to people. And as was reported earlier by Chelsea, there is real-time water quality monitoring data available online. The Karut tribe maintains a site that posts water quality data. The Geological Survey has sites that report gauge information on flows and other water quality information that can augment some of the work that's being done. And our contractors, you know, will have these crews continuing to do the monitoring and reporting for an extended period of time. Next slide.
So Mark mostly just covered everything that was on this slide. But, and you know, we talked about that the EPA did comprehensive sediment testing and that their findings included that it's mostly dead algae, a lot of fine silts, sands, and gravels. And while they did detect some things, the their expectation is that stuff will get diluted by the river water to the extent that it will not pose a danger to humans. And then the two below, the turbidity, pH, dissolved oxygen, and CFS are all available, the live data as Mark just described, and that water samples are collected and sent to regulators on a monthly basis. Next slide. So now I'm going to cover some restoration activities because folks have definitely seen them out in the reservoirs. So we have two main contractors, one to cover the deconstruction of the dams, that's Kiewit, those are the trucks you see going around, and then we have Resource Environmental Solutions, who is our main restoration contractor. So in preparation for this project, they harvested about 13 million seeds by hand. Those seeds were propagated at nurseries up and down the Pacific Northwest, and they're entering the restoration process with about 17 to 20 billion native plant seeds. They've been working on revegetating already for the last month. Next slide. And this, they use five different seed mix comprised from 98 different native plant species that will be used in different areas depending on the terrain. Next slide. Since they started a month ago, some stuff is starting to sprout up. Not as much around the Kopko Reservoir yet, kind of on the far reaches is where they were putting their focus, but around Iron Gate, especially where they were able to start reseeding on the 12th after they initiated drawdown, stuff is starting to come up. Right now, it is mostly being done with hand broadcasting, and you would have seen crews out there. Next slide. But what you will also see in the coming months, between now and March in particular, is helicopter seeding, particularly through the center portion of the Kopko Reservoir. So mostly hand broadcast around the perimeters. They kind of worked their way in as the reservoir has dried out. But for some terrain, particularly in Kopko, you guys will be seeing helicopters. I've shown this slide before, just to give you an idea of what the river will look like. The river did pretty much end up laying down in its historic path. As you see here, this is kind of an old graphic. And we talked about the five different seed mixes here, right, where you see the dark green. And then where you see the speckled green, especially around the tributary, that's Beaver Creek that you're looking at, there's a whole different restoration treatment and plant that will go there because it's considered a high priority tributary and will be good for salmon spawning habitat. Go to the next slide. And a note on fencing. I know there's been some confusion about our utilization of fencing, so we still are planning on doing fencing. It's wildlife-friendly fencing, so the deer and other critters can get through, and we'll do it to whatever extent is necessary to ensure revegetation success, and its intention is to keep livestock out of the reservoir. So if you wouldn't mind flipping back to the last slide. So around Kopko, you're not going to see it around your homes on this kind of like south shore. It's mostly going to occur on the northwest side. That's where there's issues with livestock. So no fences in front of your houses. Next slide. Just wanted to revisit this. So like I said, what we have coming now, restoration's underway. So you're mostly going to see reseeding crews, sediment evacuation, things like that for the coming months. It's going to be pretty quiet around the dams until dam deconstruction can begin in April or May. But we will start taking apart the things that are not important to the dam's structural integrity. So that's going to be the powerhouses, certain diversion infrastructure, things like that. But the dams themselves won't be deconstructed until, like I said, we go back to those post-spring flow minimum biot flows. And then it should be a pretty quick process after that. like I said, hoping to achieve volitional fish passage by fall, by sometime in fall. And then, here's my next slide and the last slide. This is my contact information. That is my email and my phone number. And if you have any questions or concerns, you're free to contact me anytime.
Can you read the site or telephone number? Because I can't see that wrong.
It's 530-670-0016. And my email address is just my name, Ren, R-E-N, at klamathrenewal.org.
Okay, thank you. So we'll bring it, I got one public comment on this. We'll go there first, William Simpson. You can just hand off if you want to.
My timer's unplugged. I'll have to call back.
Thank you. That was a very creative narrative. Thank you, Mr. Franklin.
Direct your comments up here, please, Mr. Simpson.
And Mr. Chairman. So anyway, so first of all, there's a lot of talk about reports and, you know, testing this and ongoing testing of that and this and that and the other thing, but nobody has ever seen any of these reports. There's no transparency. Now, I have a report here from Nielsen Labs that says there's lead, 6 times the normal accepted level, chromium, 178 times the accepted level, cadmium, 6 times the accepted level, barium, 37 times the accepted level, arsenic, 6 times, and mercury, 7 times. These are all things that get concentrated in fish. And when the ospreys and eagles eat those fish that have those in their bodies, they will die. That's why we almost lost the California condor from lead and things like that. There's no transparency. We keep hearing about it. It's just lip service, okay? It's shocking that they even bring up the whole idea of water quality when the only testing really going on is really turbidity and flow and oxygen, when you have all these other things that need to be considered, which we know are in the sediments. The sediments, the reason they let the lakes down so quickly, it was behind the scenes I've heard the terminology that we're just going to flush the toilet. Because originally it was the engineers and scientists that came up here 15 years ago or so said you've got to remove the sediments, you can't let that stuff go down the river. They decided that, okay, we'll just really rush it, we'll flow it down hard and send it to the ocean. But what ended up happening, and I've been around heavy equipment my whole life, logging, those sediments, most of the sediments are still there. There's 80% of that sediment is still there. And both, by the way, the Army Corps of Engineers said there's as much as 60 million metric yards, not 17. So we have all these big discrepancies. We have cherry picking of data, lack of reporting, a lot of lip service. But the reality is 80% of that sediment is still out there. It's highly contaminated with all those things I just named, all those heavy metals. That's a fact. Nielsen Lab, we tested the water, and that's just the water. If you go to sediment, it's going to be more concentrated. So what we're looking at right now is from here on in, every time it rains, that clay sediment is going to erode and leach those compounds into the river. So even if the turbidity drops to a certain extent, what's going to end up happening is you're sending heavy metals down that river, and those fish and the other organisms don't stand a chance all the way to the coast. Not to mention the indigenous people who are drinking that water out of their wells, okay? That stuff causes cancer. It causes all kinds of other neurological diseases and conditions. Also, we talked about, we're just sending down 1 year's worth of sediment. Well, the normal sediment going down the river, it was added to with the sediment that they put down. It was twice as much sediment that just went down as normal, and they only got 10, 15% of what was in the bottoms of the lake. So this is a real problem. It's polluted.
Time.
And it's going to continue to be that way for decades unless that sediment is removed or mitigated. Thank you.
Thank you. Sprague Anderson.
I'm losing my voice. So I grew up here since 1977.
Name
Spring
for the record.
Anderson.
Thank you.
And I noticed two things that they just said in the report that I had questions about. One thing with my dad's house being identified as one of those that would possible slide I was wondering, unless the KRRC is hiring structural engineers, flying a drone is grossly insufficient to identify houses affected structurally due to the drawdown. So I was curious about what actual structural engineering inspections, if any, will be done. And then another question was the gaslighting and positive spin that the KRRC is attempting right now with downplaying the wells that immediately went dry on Patricia to only two, when in fact those two wells affected, what, 11 homes? If I knew at last count, 11 homes on those two wells. And with that, what long-term compensation is going to be available to the homeowners on that road and the rest of the reservoirs? Sorry, my voice. Because their livelihoods have been completely destroyed, right, and devastated. The $5,000 that the KRRC offered my dad for his well won't even touch a new well. His well is 300, 350 feet deep right now. So that was the other thing. And I one other question, I'm sorry, the gentleman before me. What heavy metals specifically are being tested by the KRRC? Because there's been a lot of rumors and a lot of talk that it's only aluminum that they're testing for, when in fact that we know these other reports of the water testing that have been done are actually testing the heavy metals. If you recall back, I don't know, 20, 30 years ago with PGE and the contamination that went on with that, I mean, everybody's heard of Aaron Brockovich, all those chemicals that gentleman stated in that report that was done by an actual lab, those are all cancer-causing things. And you look around this room and you see the age group of these people here, my parents, everyone's in their 70s and 80s here. It's the kids that are gonna be left to deal with this. You know, all of us dealing with the homes that are left over here. So I just have those questions for, you guys are doing the best you can, but I just appreciate you listening.
Thank you. Theo Johnson.
Theo Johnson, Scott Valley, Edna. I was told when I asked the California Department of Fish and Wildlife my questions, I had questions such as, do you have a baseline on benthic macroinvertebrate measurement in the river, like before the dams came out, and then what is it now? Are we going to monitor that over time? Also, what is the water quality? What's the effect on fish? And they asked me to direct my questions to KRRC, which I haven't had time to do yet, but I'm hoping that they plan to put out press releases to do this monitoring and put out press releases. And I know I said this earlier, but I want to, now that I know who you are, I want to talk to you about this, because the press releases that we see on your website right now are not covering any of these very important questions we have. And you can't expect people to know how to get to the USGS data on turbidity or to the Karuk data on whatever they might be measuring. And are we measuring all of the contaminants that could be in the river? That needs to be done. And that needs to be immediately posted somewhere. That's not something we should have to wait for a month while you file at the FERC. So I really hope we can follow up on this, and I'll be in touch. So thank you.
Thank you. Rex Casalio.
Sorry, I wasn't going to speak. Thank Chrissy Reynolds. She filled out my card for me. The reason I wasn't is
because of the record. Your name?
Rex Casalio.
Thank you.
I don't know if Mr. Branson remembers me. The first time we met was he had just been hired. He gave a presentation at the Siskiyou County Fairgrounds telling us how wonderful everything was going to be and how enthusiastic he was. It just happened that our paths crossed as we were leaving, and I asked him as we were going, do you think you were hired, the KRRC was created with the corporate premise, the bylaws, that their sole purpose was the destruction of the dams. That was what he was hired to carry out under the auspices and the directives of the KHSA. I said, you talked about being responsible, being a good neighbor, about trying to do good things here and listening to the people. Is there any scenario that you can see, given any empirical science or any studies that would come up, if they refuted the dams coming out, do you see any scenario in which you would you would change your position or the objective of dams coming out? And he looked at me and kind of smiled and said, probably not. As it happens, over the last decade, virtually all of the empirical science that's been produced that the public has paid for and the ratepayers has totally supported our original positions, the historical, the documentation, the experiential circumstances that we've seen. That empirical science is now supported. The lack of the impacts, the negative impacts that the dams had, and actually the benefits that they have provided, and both experiments on the Condit, the Elwha, Gold Ray, all of those have shown the devastating disaster, including the assessments, scientific assessments that have come up since then. Validating the benefits of the dams and showing the negative detriments of the destruction that's unprepared for when they came out. Of course, the KRRC's response to that was, we're requesting both California Department of Water Resources and FERC themselves and their respective EISs, that they ignored the last 10 years of any science that was produced since the 2012 signing of the KHSA and the modeled science that they had performed to get to that point. Apparently, they're holding true to form. So I guess things are going according to plan. I could speak to our direct diversion that is lost now. In my efforts, I'm sorry that they're going on, and I'll try and keep it short, but our diversion is lost, is gone now for our agriculture. I have been trying since last May for all of the wonderful contacts that they've been making with the residents, I'm one of them. Since last May, I had ongoing pushing for them to address the irrigation loss during the summer when it was responsible to do that, not incurring environmental damages and logistical issues.
I'll need you to wrap up, please.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Mr. I'm trying to keep it at 3 minutes. I have, because everybody's going to have a shot at it. I kind of clearly stated that at the beginning. So make your point quickly is all I can tell you. Mr. Bransom, do you want to come up and answer some of the questions, or at least the board members may have some questions?
We already heard those 10 minutes.
Pardon?
We already heard those 10 minutes. We'd rather hear our people.
I don't have any more public comment. You want a public comment on this one?
Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Casales.
Okay, this is just a quickie. Rick Casales, Scott Valley. When I worked for you guys on the suction dredging issue, one of the big things that was the Department of Fish and Wildlife was having a hemorrhoid about was hexavalent chromium being released due to the suction dredging, and and apparently in the Bay Delta region, which I had been on the Calfed Delta stuff, I've been down there on some other stuff about it. It's a major concern on the impacts to wildlife and fish and people, and so it's a big deal. And what it boiled down to is, and the counter to that that got them settled down, not that they still weren't using hexavalent chromium as the thing to be worried about, but the fact that hexavalent chromium doesn't change into a hexavalent form other than anaerobic conditions. And suction dredging, the soils, the rocks, the cobbles, it's all aerated enough that the miners aren't turning loose any hexavalent chromium or causing it. What is causing it is anaerobic conditions under the muck of the San Francisco Bay Delta. So the chromium was transported down there and converted to the hexavalent form, which is very toxic. If there is chromium under here and there is going downstream, it's in the, it, converted into that hexavalent form and is going to keg down in the estuary at the mouth of the Sam or at the Clam. And so I think we need, and these guys probably have some answers on the hexavalent chromium, but it was enough to shut down suction dredging. Right? That was one of the big deals on suction dredging was hexavalent chromium. And I can guarantee you there's way more of that stuff coming loose out of here than all the suction dredgers on the Klamath River turn to us. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comments before we bring back Mr. Yes.